Mr. O'Sullivan, Rail 10. We're talking about Jankers, Mr. O'Sullivan. The question that kind of just arises is, if you're a kook and you got into trouble, how would you be punished?
Well, you didn't get punished as a kook.
What if you did something wrong?
Well, you would have to be something radically wrong to get any... Because you was more use in the cookhouse than you was doing Jankers.
Now, you were at Camberley, you'd had your leave, you came back, you were ready to go abroad. What happened then?
We just had a good time. We went. They organised some dances for us. Because the people at Camberley know we were going. Because that girl, George Methan, she knew we were going. She told me, she said, you'll be off on Wednesday. She was a fire, she worked in the fire brigade. She was a fire officer, whatever you like. Well, she wanted a fire officer, but she worked in the fire brigade. George Methan, they called her. And we used to go out together. She was a bit older than me, and she took me home. And we had, as I say, we had a bit of a snog and that sort of thing. We went out together, and she said, you'll be going on Wednesday. So I went away. I don't know, she said, but yeah. They'll be out on Wednesday. And so they knew we were going. But they didn't do us any, they didn't, the army sort of relaxed, let us relax before we went to Aldershot to get on the train. Because we got on the train at Aldershot.
Was there anybody that didn't want to go?
One bloke didn't go.
Can you tell us that story?
I forget the names, that's the trouble. Think of the names. Between the night before we had to be back in barracks by 9. Because we were going to, all the equipment was going to be checked, all the kit was going to be checked. We were going to get ready for going away the next day. And he didn't come in at 9. And he came in, he'd been knocked about. He'd been in a fight somewhere and he couldn't go. So they took him into hospital in Camberley. And when he came out, he paid somebody to fight him. He didn't want to go. And he didn't go. Not with us anyway, whether he went later on I don't know. But he paid to be knocked about. I mean, I've never known anybody shooting for himself in the foot, so he didn't have to go, but apparently it did happen.
But not in your...
No, I didn't know anybody, no. But he did pay somebody to beat him up. So he couldn't, so he was unfit for service.
Some of the Durham Light Infantry veterans have talked about how when they were... knew they were going abroad. A lot of their older NCOs were deliberately left behind. They were too old. Did that happen in the Foresters?
Yes.
And was there anybody that you knew that happened to?
No, not really. We got a new Sergeant Major. The Sergeant Major didn't go, and we got Sergeant Major Hennessy.
What, he was the one who joined?
He came from the Coldstream he came from the Guard Regiment. As our Sergeant Major. The original Sergeant Major was the Sheriff Forrester, didn't go with us.
And what about your officers? Did they?
They all went as far as I know. Sergeant Machin went with us.
Did the Colonel make his presence felt at all at this stage?
No.
There was no kind of special orders or special speech?
The bloke who met himself was a Major. I can't remember his name. But I don't see him as a tall bloke with. Well built, very polite, and he was the major in the front line with us.
Right, so you were trained at Aldershot.
We did Aldershot.
What do you remember about that? Any incidents?
No, not really. Only the getting on board a train with a kit bag, rifle. All your haversack and all your equipment, 30 blocks to a carriage, you know, very little bit of room for, you know, it weren't comfortable. I mean, kit bag was dropped on anyway. You didn't let your equipment out of your sight in case it got lost. Because if you got lost, if somebody lost theirs, they would find yours. And it wasn't comfortable with you, only to Liverpool, not by train.
Did you know you were going to Liverpool?
No. I knew when we got to Liverpool, not the dock was there. There was no, you don't see a Liverpool dock there, does it? In Liverpool, where the dockers tell us where we was.
So you train arrived in Liverpool, what happened then?
Well, we went aboard the Derbyshire.
And what kind of ship was that?
Well, I found it very comfortable, but because as I went as a cook again, I went into the galley. There was most of the crew were foreigners, Lascars. The officers were British or Scottish, you know, the captain and the mates and the main seamen. But most of the crew itself were Lascars. Some of the Lascars worked in the kitchen, but as soon as we went on board, the army catering sergeants took over the kitchen, and every platoon put one man in to help in the kitchens, and they did whatever was needed. The Lascars prepared the food, but so did some of us had to peel potatoes and you know, and they baked fresh bread every day, lovely white bread. The trouble was, half the people on the boat weren't eating.
What was
that? We were seasick. We wasted more food than was eaten. I mean, you'd say there was 40 men to a table, and two men would come down for the meal, their breakfast. And they'd come down and they'd say, table so-and-so, foresters, six breakfasts. What's it we do? We're sick as dogs. And it wasn't until, we must have been halfway there before they started to get more people eating. But there was an awful lot of food wasted. And it was tipped over at night, over the side.
Were you seasick?
No. I've never been seasick on a boat.
Had you ever been on a big ship before, on a voyage like this?
No, only across the island on a ferry.
And what about going abroad again? Had you been abroad at all?
Since then?
No, until before.
Oh, well, I've never been abroad until then on the island.
Mm-hmm. So you were one of the lucky ones, you weren't sick?
Yeah.
Now, you got aboard the ship, but where did you actually sleep? You were working in the galley, but where was your accommodation?
The accommodation was on the, one of the decks. It was allocated, well, they gave us bunks. And the bunks was, up in the deck, in the, I don't know how you call it, below decks anyway. And you stored your kit near your bunk area. And one of these Lascars, first time I got in a bunk, it's horrible, just closes in on you, it's like sleeping in a bloody bag, you know. So I was telling one of these.
A hammock, you mean, don't you?
Yeah, well, a hammock. Yeah. In a hammock. And it just falls in on you, you know. Let's face it, there was rows and rows of them across this. And one of the Lascars said to us, well, he said, and he gave us some pieces of wood about that long. He said, just put them across the top of it and bottom of your bed, and you hammock. So we did. Oh, a lot better. And we just settled down for the night, and the sergeant major come round and eat it with his stick. He said, you ain't bloody room for them. So we was as bad off as else. After that, I slept on the deck. And we'd only about two bloody records in the ship's amusement centre.
What were they?
Song of India. Song of India as a nobody singing. And Song of India with a singer. Well, I like the thing Song of India. I really do. But So that's the only thing we had, right?
And that was played over the public address.
Yeah, over and over again. And they'll come over the public address. You could only smoke on deck. You couldn't smoke below deck. No smoking on deck tonight. After it got dark. So you couldn't smoke on deck. That was it. Like I've already spotted it, but I think it was spotted in the wake as well, wouldn't you?
Now, did the Derbyshire sail on Christmas Day?
Yeah. Did Dad sail on Christmas Day?
That's Tom Tunney, my father, yeah, it's a day alive, yeah. They sail on Christmas Day as well.
What was he on?
On the Staffordshire.
It was the
sister ship.
There was another one, wasn't there? Was it the Leicestershire? I'm sure there was three.
Yeah, there may have been three troop ships, but I'm not sure whether they were...
I think there was all sailors.
Now, sure. So you sailed on Christmas Day as well?
Yeah.
And what was the general morale?
Poor, bloody hell, fancy day like this. Because nobody was bothered about it. I say nobody, very few was bothered about the group. We didn't put on a Christmas meal. Because the captain and the crew knew that half of the men wouldn't be. Because it wasn't the first time the Derbyshire had been used as a troop ship, was it? So they must have already known what. So we had corned beef hash.
On Christmas Day.
Yeah. And the white bread. We thought the white bread was lovely. We did, honestly. And we had one lad in with us from one of the other platoons. And we were taught out the tins of corned beef. 7 pound tins of corned beef, about 24 on. Be opened and making to hash. Do you know what he did? We used to open with a cleaver, chop the end off. He chopped the little end off instead of the big end. So we couldn't get the meat out. And when he come to try and chop the big end off, when there was no support in the tin, it was really awful.
What, it came out the other side?
Well, there was no strength in the tin itself, so when he started chopping through the big end, the tin just rolled about, you know, because it was only thin tin, it was the two end pieces what holds any tin together, isn't it? Because the bloody sergeant did cut him. Because the tins of corned beef opened with a key, if we didn't have any keys, and this sergeant had never bothered with them anyway, he just used to chop the big end off, which was easy to do when the tin was whole. It was no trouble. All you'd have was about that much meat inside the end of the tin, which was scraped out and put into the stew pot. But he chopped a little end off every one of them. So we never doing that.
Were there any other units on the ship besides yourself that you knew?
I'm sure there was units, lots of Yorkshire lads on board. I'm pretty sure. There was American, you know, there was some Yorkshire lads on board, and they were with the Notts and Darbys.
And what about other kind of non-infantry units? Were any of those around?
There was a few signals, but there was always on the Derbyshire. They travelled with the Derbyshire, and they came back with the Derbyshire. There was not civilian signals, but there was attached to the Navy. They were on the Derbyshire.
So you left on Christmas Day. Did you manage to get up on the deck?
Yeah, but now I got on the deck.
So you didn't actually see the move?
No, because I was in the cookout.
And so you were saying after about a week, after a few days, people's constitution
The food was, we weren't cooking any more food, but it was getting eaten. We weren't tipping as much over the side. And the biggest apple rings, bloody tons of them, and they floated. First, you know, when you tip them over the side, apple rings and custard, the custard dispersed into the water, but the apple rings, you could see them for far enough behind the bloody boats. But nobody liked apple rings. Apple rings and custard. And the custard was water custard. Weren't made of milk.
So there was more than enough food for anybody?
Oh, there was plenty of food, yeah. I mean, you could get, if them seven men wanted 14 breakfasts, they could have had 14 breakfasts. And the main breakfast was it bacon, eggs, porridge, tea, as much tea as I wanted.
Now, you were on the ship, you're in the, you know, you're out on the high seas. What was the routine for the soldiers, for the troops?
Well, someone was always placed on picket duty from different company had responsibility for different days. And then they would sit in the bows in the fore end, the forecast, whatever you call it. And there'd be lookouts. Army was doing the lookouts as well as the Navy. Because there was a lot of Navy men on board the ships. There was officers were it was Navy, but most of the other crew were Alaskan. So the Army did its own protection sort of thing. So they had 2 hours on, 4 hours off if it was their turn for duty. Just the same as they did on at home, you know, if you were on guard duty at home, 2 on, 4 on.
And what?
You were allowed to walk. B Company could walk the deck 1100 hours. C Company could walk the deck 1200, you know, 1300 hours. So for exercise. But he was always in a time zone. He could only, if he only could go on deck during daylight, if it was your turn to be on deck, to give him balance to smoke, have a walk, because they wanted an awful lot of room to on deck.
Did they have any kind of
fire drills? No, life would be an idea.
Was there any kind of training routines going on?
We were told if you wear this signal for fire, you make your way to your lifeboat station, and you know your lifeboat station, and you make your way there, and that was it.
What about your time off? What time off? How did you feel in the day?
In the dining area, at the tables, there were fellas playing cards, there were fellas playing crown and anchor, there was gambling going on, you know. Fellas had race horses on a board. We threw a dice and you're like a kid's game if someone was on board. And fellas had betting on it.
Was that tolerated by the officers and the NCOs, the gambling?
No, it didn't cause any. If there was any argy-bargy, you know, somebody said it's not really fair, the officer would come in and say, back them up, away.
And
but if they behaved themselves, they had a, you know, but a lot of them were sick, and were actually sick, and then somebody got Jankers cleaning up, because the bloke who was sick obviously couldn't clean up, so it meant Janker was, so even on board ship, he still had the Janker wallers.
Did they try to organise any entertainment for you at all? Was there any?
Not that I know. The only thing there is all the loudspeakers was that song of India.
What about? I think you would say on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Did they mark that in any way?
No.
It was just another day.
Just another day.
And what about?
When did we land in Algiers? Second of January. Or 4th of January. When did Tom land? Well, Tom was landed the same term, 4th of January. They didn't make any special. That Christmas and New Year, there was no special entertainment on at all. Because, really, there wasn't room on board ship. I mean, I don't know how big what tonnage they were, but it was full.
What about your officers? Did you?
Never saw at all.
What about
the only time you saw your officer was if he. If he was responsible for the day's guard duty, then he would come down and take as many men as was fit to do guard duty.
But so they were in another part of the ship?
No, they were all in the same part. Because if you were on guard, all these are tables with the guard was at the end table nearest the exit, you know, the door. If you weren't on guard duty itself, you stopped at that end of the dining hall. And the officer, and the door was being NCO in charge, you know, made sure you didn't wander off. And during your 4 hours off, if you wanted to walk around the ship, you could still only walk during the time that your company was allowed on deck. You know, because if you're unfortunate enough to be on duty, when your company was allowed to walk on deck, then it was just hard luck. But you was already on deck anyway, but you were set watching the wake go behind you. And that's a real horrible bloody thing, isn't it?
Were there any, were people worried about the U-boats and attack from German?
Well, there was, everybody talked about it, but I mean, what do you say? What do you do?
And were there any scares, any incidents?
This was I remember.
What about your escort of like Royal Navy ships? Were you able to see those?
Yeah, and you could hear them.
What
with
could
a high-pitched whistle. When they and they would come stealing past, you know, and then they would go, so I don't know how far they went, and then they would turn and they'd come back the other way. There were about three of them, I think, corvettes, or what do you call them, corvettes, something like that. They weren't big ships. They were very, very nimble.
And they were with you?
All the time, yeah.
Now, when did you actually realise that you were going to North Africa and you were...
When we saw Algiers.
As late as that?
Yeah.
Was there any orientation talk about how to deal with the Arabs and how to...
Not till we got to the rickyards in Algiers.
So that was after you actually landed?
Yeah.
So can you just describe the process of what happened as you...
I think it was a Sunday, was it a Sunday morning when we approached Algiers. Anyway, this morning...
And this was a complete surprise that it was
out. You could see Algiers right up the... It's built on the hillside, isn't it? And there's all white moss and white houses. And it looked very nice when we went into it. And we'd been prepared to disembark. We knew what to do when we come to disembarkation. Certain companies went at certain times. And that A company, B company, C company, other foresters first. Because we were in the most appropriate spot for the moon, I think. And then our lorries came to pick us up. Not to pick us up, to pick our kit bags and that. They took the heavy. We carried on rifles and we went to this brickyard where we was put up for the night. And the first thing I remember about Algiers, a little lad saying, "You sleep with my sister, 6 months all night. My sister speak English." And that's the... And that was little kids, all 7 or 8 years old. They could speak English in that respect. And then the next day we went out on the town.
We'll get to that, but just this initial, the ship docks in Algiers Harbour.
We all lined up on the quayside. Our kit bags and that was put in trucks, and they went off, and we marched.
What was your impression of the Arabs? I mean, you mentioned that incident with the...
I thought it was crap. I always had that impression of the Arabs, anyway.
In what way? In what...
They always looked dirty. I don't know why there wasn't it. There was not sly. They would, and I found out later on there was a good, worse than I thought. But there was never a good Arabs.
What about the local French colonial people? Were there many of those around at this stage?
See, they would meet with the officers. They wouldn't meet with the riffraff, would they? Because there was higher up where than the Arabs. They were better off than the Arabs, and most probably the Arabs worked for them. So they would meet the officers.
So you marched out to this brickyard, how far was that?
I don't know, it seemed a long way. I don't exactly know how far it was. But it was a pretty long march. And I don't think he mentioned how far it is, does he?
Who's that?
Summers.
Oh, the Gerald Summers book. Mm. So you got to this brickyard. What kind of place was that in terms of your accommodation?
It's It was where bricks had been prepared at one time. You know, a long wooden floor with like racks on this side. Racks on this side where when they've been making bricks, bricks have been stood to dry or whatever they do with bricks when they made them. Very, very dusty. There was one or two big chimneys. And there was very little else but dust. You could, the orange sellers used to come up with that, wouldn't they? You could buy oranges by the gross.
And how did they behave? What did they
say? Well, they weren't bad. They took all the money for you. That was we had no idea what the money was worth. And you could buy, if you had a pound note, you could get maybe 10 oranges. If you'd £1.50 in silver, you could still maybe only get 10 oranges. Because we had no idea what the money was worth.
Had you been given French money on the boat?
No.
So it was still dealing in English
still
money?
English money.
Mm-hmm. And
that's how your dad come to have bloody pound notes left.
Now, you got to the brickyard, you stayed there overnight, and you thought, well, what happened then?
Oh, we stopped there all the time, and that's where the Americans joined us. There were some American troops there as well. They came in after us. So they must have come in the same convoy, but not on the same boat. They weren't on our boat, I'm sure they weren't. But there were some Americans there.
How did they strike you?
Very bloody happy-go-lucky. We used to go forward into a protective position about 5 or 6 miles up the road from this brickyard. And if we went up on guard duty, we stopped all day. You did your four on and your four off and your four on and your two on and your four off, and you stopped up there 24 hours. The Americans, who were on guard duty with us, would bring a batch up, say at 8 o'clock in the morning, and at 12 o'clock they'd bring another batch up and take them back for the dinner. And the Americans never had to stop there for 24 hours, but we did. And I once come back with one of the Americans, with a gang of the Americans actually, right? And they took me into the mess hall, and they gave me a lovely steak. And it was the old, you know, steak, potatoes. When I got past the steak man, he put a dollop of jam on top of the steak. I thought, bloody hell, man, here. Doing a bloody good steak. But they had jam and steak. Sweets. And potatoes. They were fed better than we were, because we had compo rations.
Had you, so there was compo rations at this stage?
Yeah, we had compo rations then.
Had you seen them before?
No.
So they were new?
They were new.
Mm-hmm. Just staying on the subject of the Americans, you said they were happy-go-lucky. How did they strike you as fighting men, as a fighting force?
Well, I don't think they'd done any fighting up to that time. They, a lot of them were Negroes, but they had some special equipment.
What was good about their equipment?
It was brand new. It was up to date. The wagons. In Africa, if it come a shower of rain, very tight, 9 out of 10, our trucks got bogged down. The American trucks had a winch on the front, and they could take it, this thing so far forward, hook it onto something like a tree, and they could pull the truck out, but we couldn't. We had to get out and push, and dig. The Americans had far better equipment.